AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.
This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 54 for Thursday, May 6th, 2010. Excellence for all. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store. Here we are Thursday night, my favorite place to be on a Thursday night, in the AutoLine After Hours studio with the auto extremist, Peter DeLorenzo. Peter, great having you here.
Buongiorno, Gianni.
Buongiorno, my friend. We got a lot to talk with you about tonight.
Yes, we do.
And also joining us, as always, David Welch from Business Week, the font of automotive facts and information.
Thanks, John. Great
to be here. Our very own DW.
And joining us later in the show, we'll have Chantel Leonard, who runs all the marketing for Ford small and mid-sized cars. And good timing on that with the Ford Fiesta just around the bend here, so to speak, hitting the market. But, Peter, what a week, man. I mean, here I thought coming into Thursday, I wonder if we got a bunch of news or not. And, man, do we ever.
Another slow week.
So we got to start with this change at General Motors bringing Joe Ilawonek from Nissan to come run marketing at GM. Thumbs up, thumbs down? How do you rate this?
It's a double thumbs up, but GM really had no choice. Their backs were to the wall. They've made the unfortunate sort of, it's an unfortunate inertia thing going on within marketing. They were rotating the same people through, and they weren't moving the ball forward. There was another candidate, but I don't know who that was.
Before Ilawonek.
Yeah, and then apparently they made an offer to Joel, which wasn't quite right because it wasn't a CMO, complete control.
CMO meaning chief marketing officer.
Yes, and so I think Joel said, well, I'm heading to Tennessee. And then that, 5 weeks, and they came after him and made him an offer he couldn't refuse. I think it's a great move. I don't think they had a choice. They had to break away from the past. And, GM has excellent products right now. The marketing is not up to snuff with the products they have. So he's got a tall order. It's going to be a tough, tough job, tough assignment.
David, Bloomberg reported, a month ago or so, Whitaker saying all the big changes are over and done with. Yeah. So what do you make of what's going on here?
They tried to bring in a couple people over the past, I think 3-4 months roughly. I'm not quite sure on the timeline, but they've tried to bring in a couple outsiders for marketing, and they haven't had any success doing it. And they had to go with who they had because they couldn't get anybody else in for the job. So, someone has to do the work, even if it isn't necessarily the person you want. And when they finally got someone to take it, you got to make the move, even if you just put Susan Doherty in that job 2 months before. And, you've had this massive turnover in the sales and marketing ranks. But, marketing's been a problem for a long, long time. And they had no outsiders in. The product is good. They didn't need to change that. Finance was screwed up. They brought in a new CFO and a couple others beneath that. Lobbying and government relations was a problem, evidenced by the fact that they got completely ambushed when Wagoner went to Washington. So they brought in new government affairs people. Where they could and where they needed to, they brought outside talent. Marketing was the one place that they hadn't done that yet. And if you got a guy who's got not only a pretty good track record, but an outside view, you got to take him no matter what you've done over the past 3-5 months.
Okay, but if they couldn't get somebody in, they got Ilawonek in. How'd they get him in?
Well, I think when they first discussed it with him, there was a situation where you would come in, but there was still a factor with the old guard, that the old guard was still going to be a factor. And he wisely said, no. If you're going to go in a situation like that, and I think it's the toughest marketing job in the industry and maybe the toughest marketing job ever, then you need complete authority, hiring, firing, agencies, people, whatever. And you can't have the old guard lobbing in grenades from the side. You need absolute control. And I think once they were able to give that to him, he said, okay, I'm going to do it. I mean, it's a fantastic challenge because I think if you succeed, wow.
He'll go down in history.
Yeah.
So. Well, I'd say the Chrysler marketing job is harder because they don't have the product yet. But
well, that's true. But
GM does. But, yeah, it is.
I mean, GM's image is in tatters, you know, so they've got, it's a huge job, huge task.
So why is Susan Doherty staying on? I mean, you would think most people in a situation like that would say, hey, thank you very much, I'm out of here.
They're saying she's going to be reassigned.
We don't know that for sure.
But to what? Where would you put her? She can't get any marketing job, can she? That'd be such a big step down for her.
The only thing I could think of is overseas. There's an overseas job in the offing for her. I mean, that's what they did with Ray Young, the CFO that everybody thought got canned, and they ended up sending him to a finance job in Asia, which really was clearly a step down. I mean, you don't go from being CFO to anything but CEO without it being sideways or a step down. But, you know, maybe that's what I think she's either going to go overseas or leave the company. But, I you know, you look at it, I mean, you know, Whitaker has this reputation for being a tough guy because, you know, Fritz was fired and a lot of other people have been moved out and moved around. But if you really look at it, not that many people just were sent packing with nothing, you know, but hat in hand, you know, to go begging for a job someplace. I mean, you know, Lenave, he wasn't canned, but he, you know, he got out, went to Allstate. You know, some of the other people were handed advisory roles of some kind, you know, that he's sort of done these things humanely. So,
well, let's be clear. This move was all Mark Royce.
Yes, this was. That's right.
This is all Mark Royce.
But Whitaker signs off on all that.
Oh, absolutely. But Ed has given Mark the task that you got to fix marketing.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think Mark thought well of Susan. I mean, he always spoke well of her anyways. But I think he, you know, going with her, and you know, she doesn't have, a lot of her experience has been in sales. Frankly, anybody in GM marketing, they're mostly salespeople because they've been all about incentives and volume for so long. They really haven't done a lot of pure marketing over there. So, you know, you could go with her and maybe she'll grow into the job or figure it out. Or you can get someone who's proven the stakes are too high.
Yeah, way too high, and they're out of time. They're totally out of time. Yeah. Okay, Peter, you're CMO at GM. What's the first thing that Joel's got to do here?
I parachute into the publicist's office where they did the new Chevy campaign, and I'd say I want to see it all. And if it ain't right, we aren't going to air with it.
Well, it's not right. I mean, come on, they're coming out with this tagline,
"Excellence for All," which is just like. Really? Come on.
Well, you made a really good point in your column this week on AutoExtremist.com of saying that's a positioning statement, not a tagline.
You know, I was in the business for too long, 22 and a half years, and that was always the bane of the creative's existence because the client would alight on a line like that. And so, well, that's great. That's what we want to say. Well, no, that's a positioning. You don't go with the positioning line with the ads. That's what we work against. And this is a classic case. This is a positioning. Excellence for all. Yeah. Democratization of technology. It's a Chevy. It's all going to be good. But, okay, that's what you work against. That's not what you throw out there to the public. Excellence for all. Really?
There's no emotion.
No. I mean, come on. I mean,
it sounds too utopian.
Well, it's just, you know. So, anyway,
there, really. There's just no passion or emotion.
No, no
Chevy
emotion.
Should have
You're
passion.
Right.
I mean, this is actually a time when Chevy has some of the coolest, most
Chevy needs to crank it up again. They need to capture what they had, and it's not going back or nostalgia thing. It's capturing the essence of what Chevrolet, you know, I mean, Chevrolet and Ford are part of the American fabric. So that's task number one for Joel. It's just all in on Chevrolet. It's just like, if it ain't right, then he's got to sit there and say, okay, I'm not happy. We need to do.
I wouldn't be surprised if they do hold that up. I mean, the guy comes in and they've already picked this thing.
Well, you have to. I mean, that's his.
Or has the train left the station? I mean,
nah.
Is this where you say, hey, we'll run it 6 months and we'll come up with something?
No, it's
slam on the brakes.
Yeah, it's too risky. He has to jump in. And if it's not right and he's not happy, then it's just like, okay, guys, you got 30 days. You know, and then in the ad business, you give creatives 30 days and they're under the gun, you can come up with some great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And number two on his list, well, number one is Chevrolet. Number two is Cadillac. And down the line, Buick and then GMC. But that's the pecking order, and he has to make immediate decisions and changes and alterations. And the Chevy line ain't good. I mean, I
think Buick's pretty good, actually.
Yeah, no.
The new class?
World class and world
no,
that's
no,
that's
but I
bad.
Mean,
that's
you know.
They're selling it well. It matches the
yeah,
the
no,
of the
but I'm just saying the pecking order is going to be Chevrolet, Cadillac, Buick, GMC. But Chevrolet is number one and will be on a focus of his attention for the first 45 days.
If you don't have a strong Chevrolet, the rest of GM will never go anywhere.
Especially in the reduced footprint of General Motors. Chevrolet is the straw that stirs the drink for GM. They have got to come up with a grand slam home run, riveting campaign. And I had a reader give me a lengthy diatribe saying that I was basically full of shit, which is, you know, it's about 90% of my emails. But he said, well, advertising doesn't matter anymore. Oh, I beg that's to differ. If it's great advertising, it matters, you know. And if it's bad advertising, it matters. But if it's really good, you know.
Well, by the way, a lot of that mail you get.
It's from you?
Yeah.
No,
okay.
There are a bunch of different... You know, I figured. It's just something. We trace it back. It always seems to go to Bloomberg.
It's a different name, but it's always Bloomberg.com, oh, yeah, right?
I took out like 47 different Hotmail and email addresses just so I could haze you on your website.
But is that going to be enough right now for GM? Does it have the product that all you need is this magic marketing wand to wave and we're going to start to see it happen?
They don't have all the products, but they certainly, as David said,
they've got a strong lineup.
They've got a strong lineup. They're way ahead of what Chrysler's got. Chrysler's got smoke and mirrors right now. They've got a new Grand Cherokee, and they've got Charger at the end of the year and 300 at the end of the year.
And a crossover.
Chevy lineup is... two big holes in it, though. The Impala is old enough to shave, and the pickup trucks are getting there, and they're not going to be replaced for 3-4 years.
Yeah, I
two,
guess
3 years at a minimum. I think it's 13 or something like that.
John Cafaro is supposedly working on the new Impala. They put the A-team on the new car.
Yeah, but I've heard that's going to be like the Taurus, which is, you know, bigger, pricier, and...
Well, they have to do that, though, because, I mean... One of the things that's, I think, really held back Malibu is they sell so many Impalas because, you know, you go into a dealership and the dealer, the sales guy says, you know, for about 10 bucks more a month, you can step into a bigger car, which, by the way, I get a bigger commission on, so I'm going to be motivated to steer you to that. But they sell
a
lot of...
out of it, though?
Pardon?
I mean, the problem they have is they do a lot of Impala volume, and if you make it a bigger price of your car, you're not going to do that volume, and you got to hope that people do buy the Malibu.
Well, for cafe reasons alone, they're going to have to hope that happens. Got to get your fuel economy up.
Yeah, but, I mean, look, we're seeing Mustangs and Camaros that are 300-plus horsepower and 30 mpg on the highway.
I mean, I know. It's pretty impressive. It's actually pretty awesome. Hey, we also saw April sales this month. What do you read into them, David?
I talked to a lot of dealers about this. They weren't that impressed with the month, although the overall numbers were pretty good.
Compared to a year ago. I say, forget about a year ago.
Yeah,
a year ago was so bad that you're not going to learn anything comparing to a year ago.
Look, it's just, you know, the SAR was, 11.3, I think?
11.1, according to Ward's. That's not very good.
I think Auto Data said 11.2 or 11.3. I'm still not getting excited. I mean, it's, you know, I hate to be a broken record, but we're going to, you know, crawl before we walk out of the recession, and that's what we're doing. You know, there's still some pretty aggressive discounting out there. By a number of players. So, you know, it's not a great market.
I mean, Nissan was impressive.
They had a great month.
Nissan is kicking some butt right now, and I got to be honest with you, I'm not really sure why.
Why?
No new
or how?
Product. They're not discounting, but there's no new hot product. I mean, you know, we've talked about this a bit with Ford. You know, there is the thing where, you know, two guys in the forest get chased by a bear. You don't have to outrun the bear. You have to outrun the other guy. And, you know, Ford and Nissan are doing some things right, but they're also not screwing up, whereas everybody else has some kind of problem. I mean, Chrysler is a big mess. GM is coming out of a mess. Toyota has just screwed things up. Honda lost its mojo. And, you know, Hyundai is doing really well. But, you know, basically, you know, Nissan and Ford are doing a lot of things right, even if they don't have one vehicle that is just, you know, tearing the cover off the ball. You know, that could be good enough in a market where some of the big players are really, you know, still not there.
But, John, you were happy with Chrysler this month.
Well, look, what I'm saying is
fleet.
It's predominantly fleet, But who would expect them to increase retail sales right now? They have no new product. Everything that they've got has not been introduced for at least the last 24 months. Ergo, that's when the last introduction was. And yet they managed to increase sales and market share on a month-over-month basis. Because I say forget, you know, April of 09. And so to me, Chrysler's strategy is clear. We got to do whatever we have to do, whatever it takes, to hold on until we get the new product in the showroom. And I think they're doing that.
More specifically, they have to do whatever it takes to keep cash flowing into the company.
Yep.
Yeah. And
pay the bills and keep it going until the cavalry comes in with some of these new cars.
And, oh, by the way, Fiat's not doing so hot right now.
Well, look, I said all along, from the very beginning, that somewhere down the road, Chrysler would be bailing out Fiat, and I stick by what I said.
And it will be Fiat North America. I still think, I still believe it's going to be Fiat North America. And, oh, yeah, we have Jeeps and Rams, but it's Fiat North America.
Well, you know, like I said, Chrysler is, you know, fighting with old product right now. And the fact that it was able to boost its sales month over month, and only three companies did it, Volkswagen, Honda, and Chrysler. And so the fact that these guys were able to boost sales, and I know everyone's saying, oh, it was fleet. Well, last week I was at a Ford press conference where they were bragging about how much fleet they do and how well they run fleet. So if you do fleet right, it's not a money loser like it was, you know, in
the old
days, push model, you know, where you had all these legacy costs where it was cheaper to build cars than not to build them, so you just blew them all out. So, yeah, I'm not saying I'm impressed by Chrysler. Clearly, what they're doing right now is not the future. But they're pretty scrappy. They're doing what they have to do until the product shows up.
You're right. I mean, you have to frame the conversation about Chrysler in not under, well, you know, we're not going to wake up one month and suddenly, by providence, American consumers decide, "Yeah, I want a Sebring or a, you know, an old, you know, a 300 that's a cool car, but it's, you know, very long in tooth." They're hanging on and bringing cash in and paying the bills until the new stuff comes around. And if they keep doing that, if they can keep doing it, that in itself is something of an achievement. Mm-hmm. And then we have to see what those new products will do.
And by the way, it's interesting when you bore down, Jeep sales down. Ram sales down. Chrysler was up a little bit. All of the increase came at Dodge, where our good friend Ralph Gilles is running things. So, to me, Ralph comes out the big hero in this.
If there is something about
Chrysler
that's worrisome, it's Ram.
Yeah.
Because it's a new truck, and it should be doing better than it is.
Yeah, no, it was.
It's the one new product they have that's important and is actually pretty well done.
I think they did about 14,000 sales in April versus 29,000 for Silverado and like 40,000 for F-Series. So, yeah, way down.
Ford is just like monsters when it comes to the trucks, though, man. They will just crush you.
Well, for some reason, the Ram's not doing it, and the Silverado Sierra, it's the oldest truck in the market. The oldest truck in the market always has a tough time.
Well, not older than Titan. And
well,
Titan
those
is,
are...
Yeah, right.
You know,
and very interesting too. Tundra, Toyota Tundra had a lousy month. In fact, the Tacoma, the smaller truck, outsold the Tundra, not by a lot, by a couple of handfuls of units. But
and you know, Toyota's throwing around cash on the hood, big time.
Big time. But
I mean, until you mentioned it, I forgot Toyota and Nissan were in the full size pickup business.
I mean, yeah, I know. It's interesting to me because RAV4 showed a lot of weakness. Highlander showed a lot of weakness. Tundra showed a lot of weakness. We're not seeing and Camry and Corolla were off to the races. They had spectacular, you know, heavily discounted. But it's interesting. I wonder what's going on here. Is it that Toyota's putting all its emphasis on cars and ignoring the trucks? Or something's going on the truck side at Toyota that's not right.
Yeah.
Hey, speaking of Nissan, let's circle back on that. They got to be furious that Iwanyc would leave them after, what, 6 weeks?
Actually, it was five. You know.
But who's counting?
Obviously, he didn't have an airtight contract, and, you know, it's just one
of them had to have thrown some money at him. I mean, one point I made in the cover story, the challenge they've had with, you know, is the salary caps. Now, you know, the CFO's salary, Chris Waddell, is, I think, $750,000, which isn't a lot for a
Not for that position.
CFO. So if that's what the CFO is making, then what's the vice president of marketing making? I mean, what are they offering for that job? And they must have just said, okay, we have to quit screwing around with this and throwing some money at him and giving him the authority to do it. And, you know.
Yeah, but I'm sure anything says, look, Joel, here's the deal. You're only going to make $700,000 a year. Wink, wink, nod, nod. When we go public, we throw that away. And under the table, don't tell anybody about it. Here's the millions of dollars you're going to make.
They may disclose this in a filing at some point. I mean, they did with Liddell and with Whitaker. They get and Steve Gursky, they get a bunch of salary stock. I mean, you know, which converts to stock later on, and then when the company goes public, they can make an awful lot of money.
Big money, right. But I'm saying, I'll bet you that's got to be on a nod and a wink kind of agreement. I don't think there's any paper that says this is what you're going to get once we go public.
Yeah.
But once they go public, they have to disclose which insiders get stock.
Right, right. But I'm saying right now, they can only give them the, you know, like what Chris Liddell's getting.
Right, but they disclose that those guys are getting salary stock. At least I know they did with Whitaker and Gersten. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure they did with Liddell. I'd have to go back and look at the filings. I don't know how high up, you know, down the chain. I mean, this guy's a vice president.
Right.
If they disclose all of that in filings. I mean, the CFO, vice chairman, and chairman and CEO obviously have to. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, needless to say, yes, Nissan isn't happy. But, you know, that is the proverbial cup of coffee. You know, that's the classic, well, yeah, I had a cup of coffee at Nissan once. That's like the quintessential definition.
That was Tennessee chicory coffee.
Right. Well, hey, this is probably a good time to bring in our guest. Chantel, come on in. And joining us right now is Chantel Leonard. Am I saying it? Chantel Leonard. Mm-hmm. And you'll have to clip a mic on there for yourself. And you run all global marketing for small and mid-sized car, but you were explaining to me earlier, even though the word's global, that refers to the platform.
Right.
You're really marketing stuff
right.
in North America.
Right. I work on the marketing for the U.S. Products, but yeah, they're developed globally now for many of the small and medium cars coming our way. So that's very exciting. We have a lot of opportunity coming off those global platforms.
So the big news has got to be Fiesta.
Fiesta.
I mean, it's right around the corner,
right?
We
are right in the middle leading up to our launch. Cars are coming in the summer, so they're coming really, really soon. We just this week added some things to our Ford Vehicles website. If you go to the Fiesta page, you'll see something we call our digital webisodes. I was talking with you earlier about some of our Fiesta Movement agents that we...
Wait. What do you mean? Fiesta Movement agents?
Yeah, I should back up.
What is that?
So Fiesta Movement, we had an opportunity, a unique opportunity with Fiesta to bring 100 cars over from Europe because it was already in the market there. So we brought 100 vehicles over, and at the beginning, we said, what would be a way that we could expose these vehicles to as many people as possible in the public? And we went through the traditional ideas of test drives and other things, taking them around the country on tours and so forth. And we said, that reaches some people, but it's not the amount that we need to. And so we came up with this idea to give these cars to 100 people who were very social media savvy and ask them to write about their experiences with the vehicle. Totally honest. Unfiltered, we couldn't censor, and there was a lot of angst over whether or not that was a good thing to do. But in the end, we took the chance, and these folks wrote and talked about the vehicles and their experience, and it's been very successful for us. We've been able to achieve a level of awareness that's equal to some of the competitors, the leaders in the segment, and we haven't done any traditional advertising yet.
That's pretty good. So what's this thing that I saw in the local papers here this week that you've been training your dealers for 9 months on how to sell this car? What's with that? What do you mean 9 months of training? All they do is sell cars all day. What's this training about?
Well, we went out about a year ago, and we looked at Ford dealers and some of the best import dealers in their markets and how they were different in selling cars. And it was interesting because our dealers are the best at selling trucks and SUVs and crossovers. But what we saw in the car business was many times these dealerships were owned by the same people, even had the same management staff, had same processes in place. But there was something different between the imports and the Ford dealers, in that it came down a lot to the traffic they were getting. That in the Ford dealership, they weren't a natural You didn't see a natural flow of car buyers coming into the showroom. And so they didn't have those customers coming in, didn't have the same opportunity to reach them.
Meaning because they have so many truck buyers coming
exactly.
into the Ford showroom.
And they know where to go to reach the truck customers. They're integrated into that fabric in their communities, but not so with the car buyers. So a lot of our training has been around attracting car buyers in terms of grassroots marketing, social media marketing, again, reaching customers where they work, live, and play. So that's been a big part of the training. The other part of the training has really been around product expertise. And so we also saw that we had deep expertise in trucks, of course, and their truck competitors. There are fewer truck competitors, and as I heard you talking earlier, and they were well-versed in the product advantages. Not as much in car. And now with all the level of technology you're seeing in cars today, and there's so many competitors in these segments, we've spent a lot of time educating them on the car itself and the competitors.
One of the big dangers I see for Ford is with Fiesta, Focus, and Fusion, I'm not sure yet there's enough price separation between them. So as we were talking about earlier, you know, I come in to buy a Fiesta and you know, the sales guy, first thing he's going to do is, you know, for $20 more, I can get you in a Focus.
Yeah.
And when they come in to look at the Focus, it's going to be, you know, for $20 more a month, I can get you in a Fusion.
Yeah.
How do you avoid that kind of?
Yeah.
Because the salespeople are going to be motivated to go for the highest commission
yep.
they can get.
Well,
so they're going to try to upsell you. And not upsell you with options, but upsell you into a next car level.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. With us not having an entry in the subcompact where the Fiesta will play, Focus naturally tended to drift down. So we ended up covering that segment and the compact car with Focus. And so it did tend to drift toward the bottom of the segment. So now you see Fiesta coming in into the B segment. And then now Focus has the opportunity with next generation coming out. Focus comes out. We'll start production the end of this year. You'll see a more natural price relationship similar to how Honda and Toyota do it with their lineup because they have the similar offerings in all of these segments. And so you can expect to see us do similar kind of offering in the future.
Yeah, Ford has a huge challenge with the Focus because it's a dramatically different product. And you're right. Once it's out and the juxtaposition against the Fiesta, you will get it. But the Focus we see now, I mean, bears no resemblance to what's coming. Not even in the same stratosphere.
Right.
It's going to be very interesting.
How are you going to go about marketing these cars that are, you know, better equipped, more highly styled, and more expensive than, you know, we've seen the grassroots
right.
kind of stuff you've done so far, but I'm talking once you're in launch and you've
right.
got cars on the showroom floor.
Well, I think it's really important to get people in our vehicles because the evidence is the product itself. We really are moving to become product leaders, and in the past, we've really been price leaders in many of these segments. So, you know, you'll see it in our advertising, really highlighting some of the key leadership features. But, you know, you've heard it from us as we've gone across, as we've introduced every new vehicle, being a leader in fuel economy, something we're now going to be in every segment as we introduce new product, being a leader in technology, being a leader in safety. And you'll see those things highlighted clearly in our products as we go forward, because that is what will ultimately drive our revenue growth to being a product leader instead of price leader.
Part of the company's financial success has been that you've gotten people to buy some of the higher trim levels for mm-hmm. a lot of the cars. So you can go on right now and you can spec out a Fiesta on the website. And I loaded one up. It was over 23 for a Fiesta, which is what I paid for a Cooper S. Now, the Cooper S is it's a unique car. I mean, mm-hmm. It's the premium car, the subcompact. So, I mean, how many people do you think are going to pay that for a Fiesta?
Yeah, well, I think that is one of the advantages we have now with the global platform. So you start with the Fiesta. Price point is at $13,995. So you start mm-hmm. at under $14,000. It comes very well equipped. Power windows, power locks, standard on this vehicle. You got 7 airbags. You got traction control. All that standard. But to your point, now that we have we share the global platforms, we're able to offer technology that wouldn't have been available in that segment before. So you can have someone who could equip it up with heated leather seats, with you know the sync with voice-activated navigation, push-button start, all of those things that allow you to move up in the segment that you wouldn't have been able to get before in this size vehicle, all on a car that can get 40 miles per gallon. So that's the opportunity we have now. It makes it much more affordable for us to bring those features here.
Chantel, the Fiesta has been on sale for a couple of years now in most of the rest of the world. What have you learned selling the car there, and Do you take those lessons and apply them in the U.S., or is this market that much different?
No, absolutely. It's been a great learning opportunity for us. And you're right, Fiesta, in fact, last month it was the best-selling car in Europe, of all vehicles in Europe.
That's a pretty big state.
So, we've sold 750,000 so far of this new model around the world. And we have had the opportunity to learn. In fact, we've learned from China some of the things they did in preparing their dealers for
like
the launch.
Give us some examples.
They had a very extensive dealer checklist and things that they did for the readiness. And you mentioned the nine-month period we've used to get our dealers ready. Some of that came from activities we saw that China did. Australia had a very interesting social media bent to their launch, and we used some of their ideas as well. So we've been able to leverage such great learnings. And going forward, you're going to see even more of that, even down to the level of sharing advertising assets in terms of our digital assets on the web, even our print media and other things being able to share around the world.
Yeah, I know we had Jim Farley on our live webcast from the Detroit Auto Show, and he talked about sharing all those assets because, if I remember right, he says that can free up like 10% of the budget. And he says, and, you know, it's
and
not like we cut the budget. We go and spend it in new ways.
We reinvest that in media. So instead of spending it on the infrastructure, we're putting it back in the marketplace to further reach our customers.
So you're going to handle Fusion as well when it comes out? Or, I mean, Focus when it comes next?
Yep, Focus. So, as I said, it launches. We're going to start production end of this year. It'll be in the market in the beginning of next year.
But it's really about a year from now, right?
Come on. Early part of next year. So, and it, as Peter said, it really is a game changer in terms of the it starts from the styling. You look at the thing, and it's just a wow from the exterior. Then you get inside. The level of craftsmanship, the quality is something you've never seen in this segment before.
Is the Titanium Edition Focus for this market?
Yeah, we will introduce the Titanium in this market, as well as we introduce a five-door, which, as you know, we haven't had the five-door here. And so that's been something that we didn't talk about that with Fiesta, but we think we're going to get about a 50-50 four-door, five-door mix on Fiesta. We think it'll be a little less on Focus, but we do see that as a growing part of that market. So the drive quality of both the Fiesta and the Focus, certainly the European heritage and being able to leverage some of our driving dynamics and our expertise in that area will make this just an outstanding vehicle to drive. And then the technology, just as the same as in Fiesta, but yet another level above, being able to bring some of this high-end technology to the compact car market is really going to change the game, we think, in the segment.
I think the Focus for Ford is really, that's when the American car buying consumer is going to really sort of get the new Ford, because they're going to go like, wow, you know, that's the mainstream Ford. That's a dramatic departure. That'll be a dramatic in-market statement for Ford. That car is going to be, you know, no hype, really. That will be a game changer.
Yeah, no, I would agree. We saw the car at the Detroit show, and it's really good looking.
And knowing what Derek Kuzak and his group does with these vehicle dynamics and these Fords, you get in them and you drive them, and it's just like, wow.
They're driver's cars.
Yes.
They are driver's cars from top to bottom of the lineup. But Chantel, why are you guys bullish on the five doors for the U.S. market?
Yeah, well, a couple reasons.
What leads you to be optimistic on that?
One, I think there was a negative connotation with hatchbacks for a while. And we've seen that generation has kind of moved on. And now you've got folks who are downsizing from SUVs and CUVs who basically have been in hatchbacks. An SUV is essentially a hatchback for years and years. And so they've gotten used to that functionality. And so now they're looking for something smaller, better fuel economy, but they still want some of the functionality and versatility. So we see that happening, as well as some of the younger folks coming into the marketplace who never had the negative stigma associated with some of the hatchbacks. And they really appreciate the versatility you get with that.
You know what I wonder, too? In Europe, I believe hatchbacks are so popular because you have essentially one-car households. Here we got a car for every licensed driver. But when you have one car, it's got to be versatile. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to go to SUVs, not that much. CUVs a little bit in Europe, but you go with a hatchback. And I wonder if with the new reality here, you know, the big collapse in the market, and the market just got hammered again today.
Came back a bit.
It did come back some. Let's hope it comes back tomorrow. But I'm wondering if that might lead more Americans to buy hatchbacks as we maybe, I hope not, but from a disposable income standpoint, get to be more like Europe and can't afford to have every car that we want.
Well, you know, we see that happening in the small car, just overall growth. We see more people downsizing for more responsible spending or, you know, only buying what they need. But you see it in other things. You see it in housing where people are buying, you know, downsizing from mega mansions down to a ranch, but yet they have granite countertops and, you know, high-end appliances, just as you said. So they're getting a Fiesta, but very well equipped with heated leather seats and other things. So we see that whole trend helping both Fiesta, Focus, Fusion, all those sides of the market as people are coming out of bigger vehicles and just buying what they need.
You're going to have to incentivize these things, or are they going to sell on their own?
We shall see, but we think we have a really strong product here, so we think it's going to be a product hit, and we'll sell quite
well. They look great on the road when you see them, so and they're going to be new, and consumers, let's face it, consumers like new shit.
That's right.
They just do.
The newest thing on the block is always
the latest thing. It's just like.
How about for enthusiasts? Because Ford's got some really nice performance versions of these cars in Europe. What are we going to get here in the U.S.?
Well, certainly having the global platforms makes it easier to bring variants here. Right now, we're just talking about what we're launching in this market. Let us launch this first, but we'll be talking about in the future, I'm sure, what other opportunities we have to bring.
Specifically in the Fiesta, in the U.S. version, of course, we have to go with all-season radials,
mm-hmm.
Or at least Ford's determined it has to go with all-season radials. It does take away the performance edge off the European version of the car. Any thought given, whether it's a dealer option or something like that, of at least letting enthusiasts, maybe they have to sign a waiver and say, I understand I can't drive these tires in snow or whatever, but any thought giving, you know, bringing the car more a little bit in line, not a little, bring it exactly in line with the way it's tuned in Europe?
Well, our vehicle, in terms of the Fiesta we're launching today, our standards for Ford and Ford DNA is that we will be the leader in driving dynamics in every segment. And we are in Europe, and we are in North America as well. So you bring up a good point. And as we look at performance variants in the future, that'll be an important consideration that, again, you must be able to maintain that consistent level of leadership and global performance.
What about hybrid or diesel strategy for either of these cars?
Right. Well, as I said, we're launching with just our 1.6 is our engine in the Fiesta, mm-hmm. and it gets 40 miles per gallon, so better fuel economy than 21 hybrids in the marketplace. So, you know, what we're really looking at in each segment is what is the most affordable way for the consumer to get the best fuel economy we can. You know, we get the question about diesel quite often because we do have an Econetic version in Europe. But when you do the conversion to for our emission standards, which are more stringent today here, which takes away some of the fuel economy, and then some of the numbers that you've seen on the Econetic, we have to remind ourselves that they're in, you know, British imperial gallons, and then both their test cycle is a little different. But you boil it all down, and the fuel economy advantage isn't that much greater than what you're getting on our gas engine relative to the fact that we don't subsidize fuel prices and so forth here in diesel.
Right.
So again, it's all about affordability and what we're able to provide to the consumer.
That brings up an interesting question. I mean, if you can get 40 mpg with this car without hybrids, why bother with them? I mean, I'm not trying to be flippant. I mean, hybrids are 2% of the market. Year to date, I did the numbers last month. And they're expensive. And frankly, most of them are not fun to drive. Most of them suck. So if you can get 40 mpg with, you know, just a plain old engine.
So, to your point, so then we go to the Fusion, the midsize market, and we're able to deliver 41 mpg with a Fusion, bigger car. So in some segments, it makes more sense. But, yeah, if you can get 40 without it, we think that's a good alternative for our consumers to not have to pay the premium in that segment.
No, that's, David, you raised my point as to why I'm not bullish at all on electric cars. You know, we've had hybrids for over a decade now. Yep. There's 7 different brands selling over 20 different models of hybrids. There's still 2.5% of the market. So when EVs come out, a lot more expensive, you have this thing called range anxiety. And we need an infrastructure, ultimately, for these things to really capture on a new grid. And so, to me, it's easy to say, a decade from now, it will not even be 2.5% of the market. If it's taken hybrids this long to get there, a more expensive range anxiety car that needs an infrastructure is just going to take that much longer.
Not without some major battery breakthrough that all the engineers tell me they don't know what it is, because at this point, they're sort of at the ring and the washcloth end of, you know, power density improvements and cost, you know, cost reduction for.
Sure. I mean, everybody knows right now today exactly what kind of battery is going to be running down the line in 2015, and they have their plans for where it is in 2020, and the breakthrough's not there. Yep. Hey, I think it's time for rapid fire. So, Ben, let's bring up the graphic. Okay, let's see what we've got in here, though.
It's a great graphic.
Here, Andre says, will the small Fiat here be known as the Cinquecento? Does this mean that the big Chrysler in Italy will be introduced as the Trecento? He says, serious question, though.
Seriously, it's Jason.
With the appearance of the Cinquecento, how will Ford be bringing in, say, the Ka to compete? How about the Focus RS? That's the second. First, let's go that. Yeah. What about the Ka coming over to the U.S. market?
Well, the Ka is then one size even smaller than the Fiesta. So, you know, we think Fiesta is going to be a great opportunity for us. And as I mentioned, as people are downsizing, it's a great way of us getting in the market. And we'll continue to monitor, see what happens. But as you see us having more opportunity to share globally.
Well, she can't say because she's launching Fiesta. But, yes, there will be performance versions of the Focus. There is talk of an ST. And then a real hot one.
RS.
RS, the hardcore 300 horsepower.
We have announced that we will have a global performance Focus that will have an EcoBoost engine that will be our direct inject turbocharged engine that will be a real winner.
Really, here, the Ka is right for this market then?
The Ka, not at this time. So that's why we're not bringing it now. We got Fiesta as our plan. We're not planning right now to bring
the
top.
Yeah, I don't think the Ka's right.
No, I mean, something like a 500R Mini because they're not intended to be huge volume and they're boutique cars.
You know, there's a Ka variant in Brazil that's interesting. I don't know if you've seen that one. A little bit bigger, more family kind of car, but based off the Ka. So maybe that'd be the one. Maybe. But here's one that is just a softball lined up for you, Chantel, to knock it out of the park. George from Brooklyn wants to know, how is Ford using social media? And he also wants to know for Mercury and Lincoln, but you don't handle
that. I do.
You do?
I do, yes.
Oh,
yes.
Oh, interesting.
We're multi-talented here. So we are using social media quite heavily. The Fiesta Movement initiative was really our big introduction into that. And what we learned from it is if you allow people to talk about the vehicle in their own words, very transparent, you can't censor what they're saying, it's really powerful. So we've been able to leverage that quite well. We're also continuing to leverage those Fiesta Movement agents now in the next iteration of this, which is on our website, fordvehicles.com. Go to the Fiesta page, and we have these digital webisodes where the agents, these are real people, real consumers that are highlighting some of our key competitive features in their own words and fun and quirky ways. And so I encourage folks to go out and take a look at those. Really fun. There's one with a zombie. I'll just leave you with that as a teaser.
Do you handle Mustang?
Nothing better than zombie movies.
I don't handle Mustang, no.
Okay, that's nice.
Not a global platform. So
oh, okay. Because Danny Youngblood wants to know, any chance that the new Mustang will get EcoBoost? How about a dual clutch transmission? Hey, John, what kind of beer are you drinking? He says.
Well, we have talked about that 90% of our lineup by 2013 will have EcoBoost. So it is something that we see really, as I talked about before, as an affordable way to deliver fuel economy to our customers. So to have mass reach across many, many of our vehicles. So you know, stay tuned. There'll be a lot more coming.
I'd love to see the dual clutch automatics in the Mustang V8s and the Camaros. I mean, I think they're really missing that.
Do you think EcoBoost is right for the Mustang, though?
Not at its, not the high. I mean, there still has to be a 5.0.
Mm-hmm.
But if
which is a phenomenal engine.
Yeah.
I mean,
if they want to insert an EcoBoost V6 between the 5.0 and the standard V6, with the standard V6 having, 305 horsepower, you know, where are you going to go? And unless you bump the 5.0 up to 500 horsepower and the EcoBoost V6 lies between at about 375, that's the only way you could do that. So I don't see them doing that. I mean, they've got two great engines now. And
they do. The V6 and the V8 in that car are just, at least for the snapshot in time, they're dynamite.
Yeah.
Okay, comment from Buzzard. When are manufacturers going to stop giving us watered-down versions of European cars and just give us the real deal, like the Fiesta? I guess it starts with the Fiesta.
Yeah.
Well, Ford is, they're making no bones about what they're doing. These cars are as close to what you can drive off the showroom in Germany as you can imagine. I mean, I've driven both, and there's no, I mean, yeah, I guess minutia on the Ford test track, you might be able to decipher something, but it's so small that it's not a perceptible driving difference.
It'd be interesting to see how Chrysler handles this when the Fiat-engineered cars come over, because they have told me that 75% of the parts will be different. The main platform stuff is the 25%, and that's a lot of high capital cost, a lot of stamping and sheet metal, so they'll save a lot of money there. But they'll be wider, so they'll be adaptable to U.S. markets. In terms of performance and handling, though, it'll be very interesting to see how they do that.
Yeah.
If you don't feel like you're driving on the Amalfi Coast in your Fiat Chrysler, then they missed it.
Right. Okay, 007 Mitch W. says, for the Ford rep, is there a critical point where internet marketing will significantly influence communications with consumers?
Sure. I think there'll always be a combination of both traditional and then the digital marketing, because we really need to attack two purposes in our marketing. One is, of course, we want people to get in, see the car, buy the Fiesta. But there's also a broader goal that we have, which is to change people's perceptions about Ford. And these people may not be in the market for a subcompact car, but we do want them to start thinking about Ford. And so there's a role in traditional media for overall awareness. So as we say, higher in the purchase funnel. And then as you get down toward actually choosing between different competitors, that's more where digital plays a huge role, where people are really doing their detailed shopping. And so we think you have to have a combination of both.
Mm-hmm. Let's bring in one of the phone calls here. Ben, I'm not sure who's up first, but let's bring one in.
Jonathan from Union, New Jersey.
This is GM employee calling from London. I'd like to know how Ms. Leonard thinks GM's doing in global marketing. I'd like to know what she thinks GM could do better, or what they're not doing so good on and how to improve. I'd be interested in hearing her response. Thank you very much. Have a good night.
Well, I think one of the things that Ford has done is really focus on our key brands. And so now with Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury, I think that's something that GM is now doing as well, focusing on their four core brands. So I think that gives them some opportunity. I think we have been a bit ahead of the curve in terms of the social marketing or the social media marketing initiatives that we've pursued. And I would imagine that GM will be moving very heavily in that direction, too, in the future. So with their new leader, I'm sure they have all kinds of new initiatives they'll be looking at over the next few weeks and months.
Here's a question for Peter. Do you think the Top Gear USA show will be decent or just a big commercial?
Unless the core guys who do the British show do the American show, I just don't know. I don't see how it can translate. I mean, I like the fact that it's a British show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes we should just be happy with it. I just don't see the U.S. show coming close to it.
I've seen a lot of cool British shows come over here, get Americanized, and just completely...
Yeah, I just... the way they do it is so cool. I just want it to stay there. I just don't see the Americanized version being successful. I don't.
Right. Phil in Burlington says, are you guys going to be on location for the Woodward Dream Cruise again this year? I booked that weekend off and would like to finally attend the event and take in your show live. You bet, Phil. We are going to be there. As we get closer to the event in August, we're going to be promoing everything that we're going to be doing.
What was that show way back?
Maybe I'll even play the pipes.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah. Well, David Wells playing the piping us in. I like that idea.
You said it now, David.
I said maybe.
DW is going to play the pipes. What was that show in the 50s? What was it? You Asked for It? Remember that show?
I don't remember, but I know you're
way back, there was a show called You Asked for It, and people would call in or write in, and they would explain things or show you things. And
cool.
DW's going to play
DW. All right. Our own bagger here. Okay, let's bring in another phone call, Ben.
Hey, guys. This is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. Love your show. Keep up the good work. Listen, my rapid-fire question for the panel is, tonight is, you know, how much of a disadvantage will it be for GM to try to grow its market share in the U.S. without having its own captive finance company? I have some friends who would consider a GM car, but, you know, right now the lease rates are just not competitive. I just wanted your thoughts. And also real quick, just want the panel's opinion on the name Verano for the new Buick small car. Personally, I think it stinks. You know, why not bring back the Skylark name? Take care, guys. Good night.
Yeah, a good point and a good question.
Well, I think the single worst move GM did before bankruptcy, or what was a direct issue, was when they sold, let control go of GMAC. I think that just destroyed them.
Well, they needed the money. No,
I understand.
Jerry York argued, and by the time he got on the board, the deal was too far gone. He argued, sell ResCap, the mortgage business, get cash from that, and keep the auto business.
Jerry was right.
He was.
Now, they wouldn't have gotten quite as much cash for that as for selling 51% of GMAC, but I was talking to an ex-GM executive whose name you'd instantly recognize today, who said, you know, if we had done that, it would have been the home run, because that ResCap has lost $17 billion since 2007, and Cerberus would have been chewing on every penny of it. And GM would still have its finance company to do lease deals.
Yeah,
Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of guys at Cerberus, and GM would still have the finance company.
And don't forget, you know, one of Ford's strengths is they retain control of Ford Motor Credit.
Leasing, you can buy deeper into credit tiers to sell cars.
And they made, $700 million profit off Ford Financial?
Which then can be reinvested in a new product. We also see higher loyalty with customers who finance with the captive company.
Really?
So there's a lot of benefit. We see higher loyalty not only to the company, but to the dealer as well. So there's benefit.
Why is that?
I think because there's regular contact, first of all, so we have the customers that we can keep in touch with to tell them about our new product, but also they get regular contact with their dealer, too. And so it becomes a regular relationship that's all formed at that dealership level, and so we see benefit from the loyalty perspective as well.
I think the import companies that have their own financing are seeing the same things. Well, you know, I mean, we've all been there. You realize, we've got 3 weeks left of my lease. Then bang, 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 driving out in your new, you know, fill in the blank here. They make it very easy to come back.
I do.
Peter, Jim wants to know, he says he saw you in a BBC special about Detroit, wants to know how you think the portrayal of the city was overall, and were your scenes cut up, or did they play it as you wanted it played to get the real inside story in your eyes?
Well, here's a dirty little secret. I never watch any of the stuff I'm on after the fact. I mean, you know.
It's like actors who never watch their movies.
I was on a BBC live thing, and it was a huge deal, their biggest newscast. And it was at the height of the depression of Detroit getting beaten up in Washington and going into bankruptcy. And, you know, I don't know how they cut it up, but I do remember we were on Belle Isle, and it was sort of sunny, but then just before I was about to appear live, the clouds moved in, and then it started to snow, and it was all doom and gloom, and it was just perfect. And they had a stereotypical, what you would imagine a BBC guy on location in Detroit, you know, with the heavy British accent, and they're saying, well, what do you,
with big ears.
Yeah, what do you think? And then the gloom was descending on us, and it was perfect. But, yeah, I don't know. I never watched the stuff.
Ben, let's bring in another phone call here.
Hey, guys. It's Jonathan Brown from Old Japan, New Jersey.
I love this
guy. I have a question with regards to the new Fiesta and Focus, both very exciting vehicles. Like the fact they have dual clutch transmissions. They look really nice. My question is, why do you market them with the little wheels? I think, you know, if you're product driven, just market them with 17-inch rims, you know, as a base vehicle. I think it looks like a much more substantial vehicle and communicates to the consumer that this is a great product. So my question is, the product's great, the pre-launch marketing campaigns have been fantastic, but why not just sell the vehicle so that every person sees a Fiesta and a Focus with 17-inch rims?
Well, I think if you take a look at some of our competition, they start at 14s. So, you know, we start at 15s and go up to 16s as a factory option. You know, it's always a trade-off that we have to make between fuel economy and the ride and the handling. And so we really look at what can deliver the best combination of that. But we know there's going to be plenty of folks who go for an aftermarket kit who want something a bit bigger. And that's certainly available to them as well.
But for something like a titanium edition, why not go with some really cool 17-inch wheels for that?
You could expect to see that, wouldn't you?
All right.
I think you just got a hint there, David.
Asking you, shall receive.
I think a Fiesta would look pretty good in 17-inch wheel.
Yeah. You know, I should go back to that. I didn't answer the one question about the BBC thing, how they portrayed Detroit. I actually think BBC went out of their way to try to explain the mood of the city, what this meant to this region. I thought they did a fair job, at least what I remember of the interviews. So I don't know how they cut them up.
Unlike NBC Dateline that just came in and did another hatchet job on this place.
Yeah, well,
it's easy to do, you know.
NBC's done stories on places like Sheffield so they can commiserate, you know.
Yeah.
We got another phoner. Let's bring it in, Ben.
Hi, this is Mike from Port Washington, Wisconsin. I was wondering why North America won't be getting a two-door Focus or a two-door Fiesta. Thank you.
Well, we prioritize the four and the five doors because we think those are the highest potential vehicles right now. Two doors had really become a very, very niche part of that segment. And so as we bring the new vehicles over from Europe, four and fives, we really think is where the opportunity is. But again, as I said, as you have global platforms now, the opportunity in the future is you can do more sharing. And so if there is an opportunity in the future, it's much easier to bring over.
But two doors are kind of like station wagons, right? Us enthusiasts love them and nobody buys them.
Yeah, in fact, we get that question on Focus station wagon as well. Why aren't we going to have a Focus wagon? You know, when we last built Focus wagons, it was down to less than 7% of the market. And now as we add a five-door with some of that functionality and versatility, we just didn't see that as a high potential here in this market.
Plus, you have something coming to off the Focus that's really cool.
We absolutely do. Oh, that was a good prompt. We have a three-row Focus-based product. It's the C-Max in Europe that will actually be a seven-passenger off of a C platform. So
it's very, MPV. Very
cool. I've driven the C-Max.
Really cool white space vehicle for us because it'll offer both affordability and great fuel economy. And it'll have the same drive quality, great driving dynamics.
Like Zafira-sized, or would it be like more like Mariva?
It's
like the Mazda 5.
Exactly. And this market, Mazda 5, is the best comparator to what's there today.
Okay. Here's one who says, Peter's critical of the words in the Chevy ads, excellence for all. But are younger people, and maybe this is the question to you, Chantel, are younger people more responsive to images or words?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I think it always has to be a combination of both. And so, you know, we haven't yet launched our advertising for Fiesta, but, you know, we don't target our ads necessarily to one particular demographic because we really do need to reach both. And so hopefully you'll see where we went with Fiesta. It's going to be really exciting.
So I thought you were going to say guys like images and women like words.
I don't know if that's true, but
what do you think? Younger people more motivated by words or images or... The two go hand in hand.
Go hand in hand. I mean, even the new iPad stuff, there were words there, not just images. And I will say that the new Fiesta TV commercials coming are quite good and quite dramatically different for a manufacturer.
Here's one for you, Chantel. It says, I really like the styling. However, during ingress and egress, I was shocked at how small the door opening was for the driver. How are you going to market a car that's harder to get in and out of than a Mini or Smart to North Americans who not only like their large cars, but may literally not fit in the door of a Fiesta?
Well, you know, it really is part of the whole package of what we're delivering. And, you know, in terms of the styling, and we'll see some vehicles that there are some competitors, for example, the Nissan Versa. It is a bigger, slightly bigger package. But the styling, we don't believe, was the right trade. So, you know, we really went for a styling that is head-turning and best-in-class fuel economy and safety and technology, all of those things. We think we've got the right combination of features.
Yeah. Let's see. Let's take one more here. We're just at the top of this all. Let me just make one more sure. George from Brooklyn again says, does Ford intend to repeat the Fiesta movement with the new Focus?
You know, we've gotten that question a lot internally as well, that now what do you do next after you do Fiesta movement? What's the Focus movement? What's the Fusion movement? It is a tough thing to repeat because we had some unique circumstances. One, that first of all, we had vehicles that were already in the market in Europe and that we could easily bring over in a large number and that were tested on the road and so forth. So that piece of it is not as easily repeatable. The other piece is there was a real novelty in consumers following these folks who were driving our vehicle and what was going to come next, what were the missions they were going to complete. And I think that's a once in a one
been
time
there, done
thing.
That.
Yeah, so it would have to be in some different form. But the idea of trying to get real people talking about your vehicle in a very genuine voice, I mean, I think you've already seen us do that with our Drive One advertising campaign. So some of those learnings were rolling out across the vehicle line, but it won't be in the same format that Fiesta Movement was.
Yeah, Focus is really, I can't stress enough, a dramatically different car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have a different appeal. That's,
I like the front end to it. And you guys know me, I haven't liked a lot of Ford designs, and I think it's a good-looking car.
Yeah, no, it's a good-looking car, and I really like the five-door version, especially.
Yeah.
I could buy this car. That's how much it appeals.
And the thing we've heard in customer research, too, as they look at it, that one of the first things they say is premium. They say this looks like a premium vehicle.
It looks more expensive.
They talk about it looking more expensive, more refined, more premium, more upscale. Five-door, they talk about being more sporty. But the four-door, they talk about being this more upscale vehicle. So, and to your point, we haven't always heard that in the past.
All right.
Well, good. We're at the top of the hour. We ought to wrap it up here. But Chantel Leonard, thanks so much for coming in. And when are Fiestas going to be in showrooms? When can people actually go out and buy one?
Summer. We're saying summer.
Oh,
yes.
Why so vague?
Well, they'll be here soon.
Okay.
Soon.
Well,
not soon enough for me.
Mid to late June.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you. But David, great having you here as well.
It's great to be
always
here.
Filling in all the facts and figures that we need to know of what's going on. And Peter, great having you here for all your insight.
John, glad to be here as always.
And hey, don't be calling me a numbers guy.
No, I said facts and figures.
I drive a car.
I think that's a good thing
to, a bean counter.
To be known for, as the guy who's got all the answers.
Your cover story was really good, by the way.
Thank you.
Yeah, the one all about Ed Whitaker.
And Big Ed.
So,
by the way, I mentioned Sheffield. They have their soccer team has the coolest name of any sports franchise in history.
Which is?
Sheffield Wednesday.
What? The what?
Sheffield Wednesday.
As in Wednesday?
It's like the day of the week. I've been meaning to look up why it has that name forever. It's just a cool name for Sheffield Wednesday.
Wow.
Geez, the only Wednesday I ever knew was Wednesday Adams from the Adams family.
There's a cool soccer team in Spain, too, called Racing Santander, which is another cool name.
But Santander is a bank, I think. Santander is a big
F1
sponsor. I never really looked up what it is, but I believe it's some sort
Although,
of financial
Although, I got to say, the Japanese baseball team, the Nippon Ham Fighters.
No, the Hiroshima Carp.
Nippon Ham Fighters is cooler. Well, it's actually, see, I didn't know that because there's a Nippon Ham company that sponsors it, and that's why it's called the Nippon. But I always figured, before I knew that, I figured it was like the City of Nippon's team, and it was like some guy chasing someone with like a big lump of ham. He was a ham fighter. That's what I thought it was.
That's pretty good. Well, we want to thank everybody who joined us tonight. Remember, you can always follow us at Facebook, facebook.com/Autoline Detroit, twitter.com/Autoline. Follow Peter at autoextremist.com or twitter.com/autoextremist. And you can get David's stuff at businessweek.com.
And Bloomberg.com.
And Bloomberg.com. And anything that you want to pitch in terms of where people can find out stuff about Fiesta?
FordVehicles.com. Go to our website. You can check out the new Fiesta and the new Focus. So get a chance to see them both.
That's great. Remember, you can always catch this show and any of our other shows on your phone. Go to our website, get that Stitcher thing, click on it, and the rest is history.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, Get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutoLineDetroit.tv.
AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.